introducing the Sabre Reverse. The limited edition Sabre Reverse is now available, based on the popular Sabre Mid, but with a clean reverse colorway. It's limited to just 200 units, so once they're gone, that's it. With every purchase, you'll also get automatic entry into the Gold Edition Sabre giveaway, where one lucky buyer will win the final Gold Edition Sabre. Only 3 have been made. Don't miss out. Grab your Sabre Reverse today and secure your shot at gold.
Hi, I'm Gary Kasharovich, and you're listening to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to episode 62 of the Functional Tennis Podcast. This week, I'm speaking to Gary Kushnerovich, a former pro who's now coaching in New York City and has done an amazing job building an online community. Before we get started, a quick word about our last two episodes, whose response has been amazing. First was Jude O'Reilly explaining off-court techniques to improve performance on court and in other areas of life. And then there was the Paul Anacone episode where he talked about his coaching experience with Federer and Sampras. They were two great episodes. If you're new to the show and missed them, you got to check them out. Finally, before we get started chatting to Gary, a big thanks to our new podcast sponsor, Slinger, who make the awesome Slinger bag, the portable ball machine you can bring everywhere with you. Okay, here we go. Gary, welcome to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Thank you, Fabio. Thank you for having me.
In all the years that I know you, maybe close to, I'd say 3.5. Anyway, we're going 4 years and you came on the functional tennis journey quite early. I never knew how to pronounce your surname and Gary gave me a lesson there. So I'm just going to say it here and you can rate me on 1 to 10. So it's Gary Kushnerovich.
Oh, that's a 10 out of 10, man.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So delighted to have you on board. As I was saying there, I know you a long time. You've been putting out great content. You've purchased some of our journals, our pointers. It's been amazing, which I really appreciate that. But I know you've did really well during lockdown, putting out some great content. You've built a great fan base. So I just would like to hear about that. But before we hear about that, tell us a little bit about your tennis journey from your early days where you grew up till giving the pros a shot.
All right. So yeah, I don't want to bore everybody with the details, but I'll try to make it as concise as possible. And I am a huge fan of tennis, so I could talk for hours. And I apologize if I ramble a little bit. But I started playing around 3 years old with my parents. My mom and dad were the ones who taught me how to play. My mom started me playing, and I started with the racket being bigger than I was. So that's a great age to start, you know, because back when I was playing, we didn't have the quick start tennis that we have now, where the rackets are proportionally sized to the younger players. So, you know, I was playing with a full size racket and needed help holding it up. And my father was my coach through my developmental years. We spent a lot of time working on my game together, many hours on court, which is one of the main reasons why I think I'm really so passionate about tennis. And one of the reasons, we'll, I guess we can come back to this later, why I put out so much content, because I learned a lot from watching videos that were available back then. And we didn't have, you know, the Instagram and the YouTube. It wasn't as big as it is now, obviously. And there wasn't as much free content out there that was available. So, you know, watched a lot of Nick Bollettieri tapes and, you know, Pat Echeverry fitness tapes and things of that nature, trying to sculpt my game together. So that was kind of my developmental years. And I went on to play college tennis. I played at West Point at the United States Military Academy, which is a D1 program. I played there for 2 years. And then I played at St. John's University, transferred there. I played there for 2 years and was fortunate enough to play under two pretty great coaches and attained two championship or conference rings for the Patriot League and then the Big East Conference. For those of you that are familiar with college tennis in the States, you know, there's different conferences for the different universities. So those two are not the strongest conferences for tennis, but you know, it's still a little great little achievement. I think to be able to have a ring. You know, it's so cool.
No matter where you are, Gary, if you're winning, it's a great achievement.
Exactly. Winning is winning, right? Yeah, exactly. So, and then as I was finishing up my college career, I started coaching. I coached a little bit when I was still a junior, you know, just for some extra pocket money. And then when I was at St. John's, I started coaching a little bit as well to kind of, you know, like make ends meet and try to, you know, pay for the extra stuff that I wanted. And I started to develop this, you know, real passion for coaching. And I had at one point fallen completely out of love for tennis. When I graduated from high school and I went into college, I basically had achieved my goal of getting into school. That's what my goal was. And I really didn't want to play beyond university. But after I started coaching when I was at St. John's, started coaching a little bit, I started to develop this passion for high performance coaching specifically. I was really fortunate to work with Tim Mayotte and Lee Hurst. Tim Mayotte was former top 10 player. He was an incredible role model for me, you know, working with these players, and the same with Lee Hurst. And I was able to see what it actually meant to work with high performance players. And there really isn't that many coaches or facilities in the New York Northeast region that are, you know, really high performance focused. And so it was interesting for me to see that and experience it. And so it was at that point that I kind of decided, hey, I've never played ITFs. I had never had an opportunity to travel internationally or see other players outside of maybe Orange Bowl when I was like 12 or 14. And, you know, by the time you're in your 20s, you don't really remember the details of that. So I decided that I wanted to try competing on the pro circuit so that I could see what it actually takes to play at that high level, so that at one point I could bring a player to that level. So the whole reason why I started playing after college, as I was coaching as well, was to coach better, right? So that was the main driving force behind me actually wanting to go out and compete and travel a little bit. Yeah, I guess that's how I started coaching really more seriously. I was coaching to fund my traveling so that I could go and experience tennis in other countries and see what other players were doing, what other schools of thought there were, and learning from that. I was fortunate enough to pick up a couple of ATP points, made a couple of good runs in doubles, had an overall really great experience, and then decided a couple of years ago that I think that was enough for me, traveling and living out of a duffel bag, out of a suitcase, and that it was time to kind of start focusing more on what I wanted to actually be doing, which is coaching full time.
Great to know what you want to do, and that you knew you weren't going to grind it out on the tour for 10 years and, you know, you don't know what the results are. So it was good that you could just make that decision. But you played in the New York Open a few times. Tell us about that.
Yes, I've been really fortunate to win the wild card for the New York Open on two different occasions. So it's been hosted in New York for 3 years now. Luckily to win it the first time, lose in the finals of the playoff the second year, and then win it again the third year. So I've played the qualifying for the New York Open, which is an ATP 250 event. And it was an extreme, extreme honor and privilege just to be out there competing with that level of player. And got to see, you know, what their lives are about a little bit, and see the stresses, and see, you know, that even those players that we think are untouchable are touchable, right? It's really not that far off from where guys in the top 500 are, and even lower in the top 1,000 are. So it's, you know, there's percentages that really separate players as they get better and better, even decimal percentages, right?
Yes. And how did the matches? I saw a bit of your match. Was it last year? End of last year? When's New York Open on?
Yes.
The end of last year.
This past year, I lost to Jason Jung. Got routined, if that's a nice way of saying it.
There were some good points put in there. I only saw the highlight reel. That's what I saw. And it was your highlight reel. So I saw some good points in there. And I thought, yeah, like you weren't, you know, you're competing. It wasn't, you didn't get, what was it? Was it 3-2 or what score was it?
Yeah, I think it was 3-2 or 3. Yeah,
well, that's pretty respectable.
Maybe it was 4-3. So yeah, it's all right. Yeah, for a guy who coaches full time, doesn't train, to play against a guy who makes a living off of it, I think getting a few games is better than nothing. But it's interesting because he had an incredible run that year. He made it to the semis, and so I thought, one of the biggest weapons in my game is my serve. And he was treating me like a child. And I watched him play against Riley Opelka. He was doing the same thing to him. I was like, okay, it's not me. It's definitely not me. So
he was just seeing it like a football.
Yeah, it was easy for him. You know, he's just taking it on the rise. I watched him take Opelka's, 115 mile an hour second serve on the rise and redirect it. And I was like, okay, I don't feel that bad about it anymore.
Yeah, no, that's good.
So
that's good. And tell me, what's your favorite match, the one you remember the most from your whole tennis career?
That's a really good question. I would have to say, my favorite match would be probably this year at the New York Open. The first time I played it, it was insanely nervous, and I actually, I didn't do poorly. I lost, I believe it was 5-3, something like that as well, the first time I played. But I felt very inadequate when I walked onto the courts. I felt very lost, and there was a lot of pressure. And it was really, I was still competing at that time. I was still trying to, break through, I guess, so to speak, on the pro circuit. And so the idea of getting 6 ATP points by winning a first round was, it made me really, really nervous. And, I had some opportunities, had some looks, and I wasn't able to convert. And it was really interesting that this year, by far, I felt the most comfortable on court. And it was nice to have a lot of local fans. A lot of my friends and family came out, and people I've worked with, and other coaches in the area who know me. And it was really nice to just be there in that environment. And I think that I did a much better job conducting myself this year than I did maybe that first time around, because I had put so much pressure on myself. And this time it was fun. It was more fun than pressure.
Yeah, no, that's important, that it's fun. At Functional Tennis, we are all about helping your tennis game get 1% better every day. That's why our match and practice journals are a great tool to have in your gear bag. The Functional Tennis Match and Practice Journals help you plan and evaluate your matches and practice sessions. It includes goal setting, quotes, pressure tests, and more. It's used by players of all ages and levels, and it's a great way to get away from your phone and focus in on your game. To learn more, visit functionaltennis.com. And you probably had more fans than all the other guys put together out there, I'm sure. Being a local, and people want to come see you play. I think that's what happens.
Yeah. It's fun. It's like, Noah Rubin is from Long Island, so there was a decent crowd for his match, and I watched him play as well. But it was funny because it was similar in my match, and I was like, oh, this is nice. I'm as famous as Noah Rubin. That's what it felt like.
Loving it. Great.
For a brief second. Yeah.
And tell me, does any bit of you wish you were still playing, or are you just completely happy you're coaching?
I love competing. So, I still play local money tournaments, and I'll play tournaments here and there. But the thing that is really, people say, oh, you're so lucky to be playing on the pro tour. I think they forget that it's really a grind. It really is a grind, especially at the futures and challenger levels, having to bounce from place to place, trying to scrape together $100 to pay for a hotel, or, make sure that you have enough food or like money to eat, I think is really overlooked. The majority of players who are trying to break through don't have funding. And so when I look back at it, I'm like, wow, I was incredibly fortunate to be able to work and pay my way through these tournaments, whereas many people don't even get that opportunity, right? They don't even get a chance to play. So to say that I wish I was still competing, no, I'm definitely, that chapter in my life is done. I'm really happy with the experience that I've had and the friends that I've made across the world. But realistically, it wasn't something that I could see myself doing for, like you said, for 10 or 15 years. You know, like there's the stories of, you know, even Fognini, you know, he grinded for 10 years before he really made a massive breakthrough. And to have that dedication to take that many losses for that many years and still be able to come out and be incredible and to continue winning is, I don't think most people are not made for that, realistically.
Yeah, you need to be hard as nails and just be fully committed. And, you know, we don't hear about the guys who do their 10, 15 years and never broke through, and they're sort of in a lost position because they may not have education. They wouldn't have local contacts because they've been traveling for 15 years, which puts them all in a really tough position. And I think, obviously, the ATP do try and help people, you know, to make the transition, but I think they try and help more the successful people, the people who've been to top 150, top 200. That's who they try and help. It's the other guys. Like, there's plenty of guys who've been struggling on the tour for years. I won't say struggling. I wish my level was top 300, 400, 500, but in the grand scheme of things, they're struggling if you're going to be top 400 for 10 years. And I don't think there's enough done to help those, but I think that's a conversation for another day. But so, Gary, let's talk about Instagram. You're an influencer. How are you with me saying that?
I definitely don't believe that I am. when you first said it, I laughed. I really did. I thought it was hilarious because I don't see myself as that. The whole Instagram culture it's interesting. You know, it is. There's a lot of, like you said, it's the highlight reels. Like, yeah, I lost that match 3-2 against Jason Jung, but all the internet saw was, you know, the 4 or 5 points that I played unreal. So,
well, unless you looked at Jason's account,
right. exactly. So, you know, I definitely don't see myself as an influencer. I mentioned earlier, one of the main reasons why I try to consistently post content is because I know that there are many, many players out there that don't have a coach or might not necessarily be able to afford a coach. And so I would love to help those players out because that was me. That was how I learned how to play. We couldn't afford private lessons from the best coaches. And so my dad would work full days. And then after he worked a full day, would come home and we'd go on the tennis court and we'd work on my game together, and we would watch videos and analyze things and record and you know, go back to the drawing boards over and over again. And my whole reason for posting is to be able to provide some sort of value to, you know, to the people that are doing it on their own. And I definitely see that there's a lot of coaches that follow me, and I get messages and DMs that are like, hey, you know, it helps with my players. But I also do get a lot of parents and young players who are like, hey, I really appreciate this. I'm working with this on my son or with my daughter, and your drills really help. So that's kind of where the drive to do it comes from.
You know, your drills do really help. And I know I didn't mention, I'm only joking what you call an influencer. You definitely don't come across as a typical influencer. You're putting out some great content out there, which I love, which that's how I started following you all these years ago, because you'd started that path already. So from early on, you're putting out some good content, and it's hard to find really good content. And you come up with, you know, you're, what would be the word? You're a bit of a MacGyver. Do you remember MacGyver? you know, you come up with, you figure out in lockdown, you're figuring out how to do drills on top of your, on the top of your apartment block, and you're doing different things, and you know, you're always trying to figure stuff out and make and do what you have. And I think there's a lot of people stuck in bad positions during lockdown, and with your content it would have helped them a lot. So I can see where you get that feedback from parents and other coaches and kids.
I appreciate that. I am a big believer that if you're passionate about something, you're gonna figure out a way, right? Like there's so many times when we don't have access to the best courts or the best facilities, or being, you know, if you're on lockdown or in lockdown, you know, you can't leave your home. And if you're passionate about it, you'll figure out a way, right? You'll volley against the bathroom door, or you'll work on footwork in the, you know, the 4 square feet that you have between your kitchen and your bathroom, or whatever it might be, right? You can figure out a way to get better. And I think that sometimes people focus on the I can't versus what can I, you know? And I think that's really an interesting mindset to be in, because it forces you to be creative and, you know, figure out a way, like you said, to MacGyver your way through the situation.
Tell me, I know you got a slinger bag. You actually won a slinger bag. And tell me, Slinger, I'm not sure if you know, our new podcast sponsors here. So this just working out really well. How is your Slinger bag?
It's incredible. Honestly, I had a ball machine when I was a kid. We saved up for it. And I think it cost us like $2,500. And at that time, so it's, you know, whatever, with inflation and all that, probably by now, it probably would be way more. But I just remember it being so cumbersome. I hated using it. It was such a hassle to get out of the house, to get to the course, to set up. And actually the slinger bag is now it's like my basket. It's my bag. It's where I keep my waters. It's what I charge my phone with. It's the whole nine yards. It's incredible equipment. It's an incredible piece of equipment. I shamelessly promote it because I love it. You know, it's not even for the, there's incentive that they've brought in later on. They're like, hey, do you want to partner with us in some capacity? And I was like, guys, I would do this for free. Yeah, I don't need the incentives, but I do appreciate it. It's a tennis player's best friend. You know, like the number one thing that separates, you know, really good players from average players is hours on court, right? And it's so hard to go out and get the extra reps. And now you have no excuse if you have this bag. You can go out and get the reps in on your own. And it's portable. It's lightweight. It, you know, it's user friendly. And the topspin feature, I've gotten very few complaints about the topspin feature, but that's like the only complaint that I've gotten, that it feeds, quote unquote, too aggressively. I'm like, okay, if you can handle the feed of a topspin feed, you could obviously lower how aggressively it feeds and you could have it like ball boy feed it to you. But if you could get used to an aggressive topspin feed, a regular ball is routine for you. It doesn't even phase you. And so why wouldn't you want to train with something that's going to give you something that's more difficult, right? So that you, instead of you having to, you know, rise to the occasion of the really high quality ball that you'll see when you play, you're actually like, oh, I've seen way harder than this. This is very easy for me. It's really incredible.
Look, I think the guys at Slinger will be delighted to hear that. So that's worked out well. Yeah, it's been amazing having you on, and I can't wait to see some more of your content. You did say you're going to make us a little pointer video, so I look forward to seeing that.
Yes, I'm excited. I outlined some drills. You gave me some good ideas as well, the stuff that I haven't done. So I'm gonna you know, put that together hopefully this week, and then post it on my Tennis with Gary channel and on my YouTube channel maybe as well. And so if anybody's interested in following that, you gotta tune in, you know, for some great quality stuff. You know, I appreciate that you're trying to get me to do it, because I'm definitely in. I use it all the time. It's an incredible product, you know, for working on your sweet spot and seeing the ball and tracking it and staying focused. It's I play points with my 10 and under kids with it, which is really hard, but it evens the playing field. Yeah. So it's a great, great tool.
Great. Thanks. So for anybody who wants to learn more about Gary, check him out on Tennis with Gary. And it's been great having you on, Gary.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Fabio.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Really hope you enjoyed that episode with Gary. A huge thanks to our new sponsors, Slinger. And I'll be back next week. Take care. Bye.